Dallas, Texas, please make some noise for Josh Johnson!
It is crazy to me that everybody, no matter who you are a different person to everybody that you know. Like, we have the idea in our heads, we understand that we're different to our parents than we are to our friends than we are to our coworkers. But I mean, like, every single person. Just because of when we meet each other, how we meet each other, what we mean to each other and everything. I have a friend from growing up. His name is Squish. And Squish got his name because he's pretty accident prone. In fact, the way I met Squish was he was walking and this kid was in the cafeteria and he stepped on a pickle. And this kid flew. He stepped on the pickle like he stepped on a Hot Wheel. I didn't know pickles had that type of movement. The pickle didn't even disintegrate. He just stayed on it perfectly, like a roller skate, and couldn't stop himself like a Looney Tune. One leg in the air, one leg on the pickle, and couldn't seem to get off. And he was screaming the whole time. Ah! This man was Janelle Monae-ing across the floor in a panic. And this kid slid into some trash cans hard. And so I run up, some other kids run up. And from then on, he was known as Squish. And Squish is, some of his accidents aren't even his fault. Like, we had a classroom fish. Was floating in the tank, swimming around everything. And, you know, it was a different person's turn to feed the fish every day. And whoever fed the fish last didn't close the slide in the top of the tank back. And so the fish popped out of the tank, landed on the floor, and was bouncing around a little bit. And Squish just happened to be walking by. And we all screamed. We were like, no! And he was like, what? Squish's number one accident that solidified his nickname and his understanding to us as a clumsy person actually happened on a field trip to Dallas. Yeah, so we were all hanging out, getting some food, because the field trip was like all planned out. We had a thick itinerary, and so we got to have lunch at this Italian place, and Squish got some spaghetti to go as well. And of course, throughout the course of us walking around, he trips and falls on his spaghetti. But he doesn't just trip and fall on the spaghetti. He manages. Normally, when you fall on to go plate, it stays where it is. This kid fell and somehow managed to get all of the spaghetti from his stomach to the top of his head covered in marinara sauce. It was like there was more marinara sauce on him than there was in the to-go plate. And unfortunately, it was a field trip to the book depository. So if you were passing by, all you saw was a kid covered in marinara and spaghetti on his head going, help! I remember when Squish got married. I remember when he had a kid. And I remember when his wife told him. And is wild because when she told, I wish he had been doing a bit or something, just making a cute little joke for the two of them. But she said, we're pregnant. And without missing a beat, he went. Because now Squish has a kid and this kid calls him dad. That's wild to me. It's wild that the people that I grew up with are upgrown people. That feels crazy. That genuinely feels unacceptable. That the people that I grew up with are making new people that don't know what they're like. Because I know these people. This kid calls Squish dad. I'm like, oh, you don't, that's not dad, that's Squish. No, you weren't around, but. And I think I'm thinking about it so much because I am older now than my parents were when they had me. And it sort of recontextualized every memory. Because every year that I get older and I'm just going about my life, I think about how they were the age that I am now, but with me. They I'll have a bad day and think, oh, this is the worst, and not thinking about how they used to hang out with me, but not when I was like fun. They had to hang out with a version of me that couldn't read. So you're already having a bad day, and now somebody that can't read is making it worse. You picking them up from school, they sitting in the back all, and now you have to try to figure out what's wrong with somebody who can't read. Because they won't tell you, one, because they're a kid and they're being all secretive and everything, but also because they can't read, so they don't even know the words to describe what they're feeling. You gotta do charades to see what's wrong. That's tough. You know, like I think back how my mom, a lot of the moms that of the kids that I went to school with, like when you're a parent, I can't imagine being a parent. I cannot imagine being a parent right now, being a kid right now. I feel like I barely did all right with what I had, you know what I mean? When I was growing up, because I have a lot of empathy for the people who are trying to like raise a good person, doing your best to just make a good person. And the way I look at it, the way I look at life lessons is a lot like lunch. Because, you know, as the parent, the person who has knowledge, the person who's trying to do what's best for your kid, you can make them the best lunch possible. And when I say the best lunch possible, I mean like actually everything that they need. There's vegetables, there's fruits, there's some protein in there. You go ahead, you got the fiber. Everybody forgets the fiber. You got to get your fiber. You don't want to be full of protein and no fiber. You just be sitting there stuck. You did everything. You got vitamins and minerals in there. You got things, keep them hydrated, give them energy, make sure the bones grow, make sure the brain's healthy. You did everything. And then you send the school with that lunch. But then it's up to them. Once they're not around you, you don't know. You have no idea. You know, maybe they're going ahead and they're taking out like the one sweet thing in that lunch and then they just dump out the rest. I went to school with a girl just like that. She loved lunch. Lunch was her favorite because she was a wheeler dealer. She was a broker at lunch. I've never seen anybody finesse like this before. She would start lunch with one snack pack. She would end it with 16 cookies. And we would all have been had and we didn't understand how. We all just sit here, no treats, because she had mixed us up so much. She was the only person I've ever seen in my entire life during lunch going ahead and selling cookie futures. She was over here like, you know I'm good for a snack pack every day, all right? So you give me the cookie now, I'll give you a snack pack tomorrow. Now, that snack pack, you're going to keep it for a little bit, but you know he's going to have M&Ms on Thursday. And she did this every day. Every day she finessed the entire class out of everything. And her parents made her a good lunch, but just... we're not really trying to hit that celery right now. Not when we got delicious brownies homemade. And after a while, it took some time, but after a while she showed up to school and she had this rash and she was always tired and stuff. And we found out later that her parents had to take her to, you know, the doctor, and she has scurvy. In the modern age, it is damn near impossible to get scurvy because every day, even by accident, you slipping into vitamin C. You know how many treats you gotta be eating with nothing good to hit the scurvy? This little girl had scurvy like a Caribbean pirate. Because her parents were doing their best for lunch. They prepared her as best as possible. They gave her everything good. But then when you're around your friends, when you're alone, a parent can't know what's going to happen after that. You know? Like, there's a show on Netflix called Adolescence. And I watched it. And I think it is a very well-made show. Out of all the critiques I've heard about the show, and there are plenty, I have not heard anyone say that the acting isn't phenomenal or that the camera work isn't incredibly interesting, you know. But it's a tough watch, and it's heavy, and it brings up a lot of things I think are important to talk about because it's sparked all these conversations online. It's the most watched English-speaking show in Netflix's history, and... you know, there are people being like, oh, finally, we're discussing the way that misogyny has creeped in online into every facet of society. And then there are other people being like, no, it's a moral panic. Like, these things are bad, but we're blowing it out of proportion. And so that discussion, I do feel like, is important. And I haven't, only one person, there was this one woman I was talking to that was like, it's my favorite show of all time. And I was like, ugh. Favorite all time ever. Did you watch the whole thing and that's your favorite thing you've ever watched? I'm not judging. I'm just saying that's a lot like being like, my favorite place to go is the dentist. It's like, all right. I mean, it's good that you went, but just you telling me that makes you feel good? You love that? You love somebody just playing in your mouth like that? Quizzing you while flossing you? That's your favorite thing? It's just as odd to me. Teach their own. But I do think it's really important that we have these conversations, and it started making me think about my own life, you know? When I was little, I didn't even know what it would mean to have a girlfriend, really. And I only think I thought about girlfriends because adults would like pinch me on the cheek and be like, oh, you're so cute. You must have a little girlfriend. You got a little girlfriend. Be like, ah, nah. You're not around the rest of the time. I'm actually quite a lot. But there was someone who I used to eat lunch with for a little while there. And sometimes we'd eat lunch for the whole period of lunch, and sometimes she would just come over, you know, to make sure we chatted before lunch was over. And we would always split my cookie, right? I'd break my cookie in half, and we would chat. And I knew that I got to do every day at school my two favorite things, which was talk to her and eat cookies. No. And so she'd come over, we'd break bread, cookie bread, we'd break bread and everything. We talk about all sorts of stuff. And I didn't know what it would be like to have a girlfriend, but I knew if I was going to have a girlfriend, it would be her, right? This is who I like talking to. It's who I like spending time with. It's the only person I'll share my cookie with. One day, I was walking to the monkey bars, you know, get some swings in. It was good to get the shoulders working. And when I got up to those monkey bars, I wasn't right up on them. I was still at a distance, but I saw her kissing a boy. And I was distraught. I saw them kissing. I was like, no! I didn't even think of kissing! Is that what boyfriends and girlfriends do? Hey, you know, we little, so they not even really kissing. They more just butting heads and everything. But even so, I was torn up. I was like, no! We share cookies every day. She get my cookie crumbs all on his lips. And I didn't go up to the monkey bars. I went to the little castle that we had on the playground, and man, I cried. I was torn up, and I didn't know what to do in that moment. I didn't know how to fix the way I was feeling, and it felt like I had done something wrong, even though it was just life happening. This person was still someone who I liked very much, but I was like, no, what to kiss? Did the cookie mean nothing? I was so torn up. When we went back to class, I couldn't even learn. Teacher sitting there with a word problem, simple word problem, trying to get me to hit that 3 + 4, and I was like. 3 kisses. Plus 4 kisses. Is what broken now? And I think it's the discussions that are arising because of the show, I think, are important, because whether it feels like it or not, we are all each other's responsibility. And I think that there's something happening, and it's happening to young men, it's happening to boys, where these things online, whether it's, whatever, red pill, manosphere, whatever you want to blame, there's a certain rhetoric that at least fills in some blanks and tells you this is the way that the world is, this is how you fit into the world. And it's an assuredness that the people around you don't seem to have. Because when that happened, when that kiss happened, when you're a kid, you see things in black and white. You haven't lived long enough to find nuance in between every experience. And so I didn't see that as like, oh, this is my friend, but she happens to like this person or also like this person or like this person more. I internalized all of it. I was like, no, she likes him because I'm ugly. That's got to be what it is, right? Or she hates me and she likes him. Everything has to be very distinct. And that's tough. I think it's something that we would hopefully be better at recognizing, because it's the same thing that happens to young women. Like when I was a kid, especially when I got to be a teenager and stuff, I was angry. I had all the regular problems. It wasn't like anything extra was happening. But one time an adult sat me down that I was talking to for a long time, and they said something that stuck with me ever since, because I was just telling them how I felt about everything, about myself and the world and the people around me, and it all stemmed into this one question. They were like, who taught you to hate yourself? And I couldn't answer it. Because the truth is that I don't know if it's that explicit, and I don't think that it needs to be. When you're young and you're just trying to make your way through the world, I think it's a balance that gets created with the people around you and with yourself, and it's easy to tip, you know? I don't know if anyone was running up to young women specifically making sure that they felt like they were ugly. They just told them that everything that wasn't them around them was beautiful. And so then you have something very similar happening to young boys right now that's coming from all these different directions. And I don't think it should ever be a contest. I know one thing impacts another thing, and there are people that when someone is hurt, they become hurt too as a result. But I think that it's not really about who has it worse when we all have it bad. Sometimes when somebody's going through something and they're open about it, if it's not the person that we decided to band around, right? If it's like a unique person going through something and they're sharing it, sometimes the response, instead of being empathy, is almost backlash, right? They're going through something and they're being open about it, and people are responding with like, oh, boo-hoo, you'll be fine, it's all good, right? But this person is coming to you earnestly and they're going through something, you know? Like, we don't really, if I'm being honest, we don't really talk about the like body dysmorphia that a lot of men have. There are men packed into gyms trying to look like the action figure. Meanwhile, the action figure doesn't look like a person. Like, that's not, like, your knees aren't supposed to be as big as your head. You're just never gonna get there. That's not how people are built. No one does that. No. And even more than like body dysmorphia in men, the thing that I don't think I hear anybody talking about is strength dysmorphia. I know a lot of men, good men, who have looked at a box or a pool table or a TV and thought to themselves, I could pick it up. We are losing more backs in this country to men's strength dysmorphia than anything else. Strength dysmorphia is the number one cause of hernias in men. Because then you'll try to help. You'll try to be that person, to be there for them, be like, hey, wait until we can get some help. Don't do it by yourself. And they'll be like, you don't think I can pick it up? And you're like, it's not about me. Your knees don't think you can pick it up. Your legs don't think you can pick it up. Your back doesn't think you can pick it up. Your glutes don't think you can pick it up. One time I was on a road trip with some friends, and we heard it when the tire popped. We heard it immediately. So we pull over, right? And our friend who was driving, it's his car. He had everything ready to go. Had the spare tire. Everything had changed the tire, except he forgot the jack. So then our friend Jack says to us with a straight face, all right, everybody just, y'all get in position, everything, get ready to change this stuff, and I'll just pick it up, and y'all change, y'all put it back down. I had questions. I was like, pick up what, change what? He was like, no, like, y'all pick it up, and, you know, start changing, I'll put it back down. It may take us a couple tries, but we'll get there. There are two type of people who can pick up a car. One are strong men. And by strong men, I don't just mean men that are strong. I mean actual competitors, like strong men. All they do is train and work out and lift heavy things. They almost look like the action figure, but they're not quite there because your knees are only going to get so big, right? But they got very big shoulders, big head, everything, big arms, and they pick up boulders and they put them on top of stuff. And then sometimes they pull trucks. They have the chain and they pull. And you can see that tire moving a little bit. You're like, he is moving it. Wow. You can watch it on ESPN2. That type of man. That man right there, he'll never turn around fast, but he can pick up a car. You touch him on the shoulder, it's going to be a while before he gets to you. But he could pick up a car, okay? He will never, never kill a fly. He's not gonna be that quick with it. But if you need a donkey murdered by punching it in the face, he can get that. It's dead. That's one of the type of people that can pick up a car. The second type of person that can pick up a car is a mother whose baby is under the car. And even then, even in that scenario, she can pick up the car because the part of her brain, out of concern for her child that would normally say, girl, think about your joints, has shut off. It's not like she picks up the car, gets the baby out of the way, and is fine afterward. Her ligaments are shot. But she can do it. So unless, bro, you've been doing some exercises that we haven't seen, or there's a child under the tire that you care about very much, I don't think this is gonna work. And he's like, you don't think I can do it? I was like, it's not about me. Your legs don't think you can do it. Your back doesn't think you can do it. Your glutes don't think you can do it. But he wanted to try. And so everybody got out of the car. Everybody got in a position. You know, one friend was there with the spare tire. Other friend was there getting ready to start unscrewing everything. I didn't have a job, so I just stood there, you know, as a witness to record, you know. And we know that there is a way to work out. We know if you want to lift, there's a way to do it correctly. You're trying to deadlift, try to squat, get your legs shoulder width apart. You go ahead and make sure your knees stay in line with your feet so you're not buckling one way or the other. You go ahead and put your butt out when you're trying to pick it up. You keep your back neutral, keep your core engaged and everything. You lift it up, make sure your neck is neutral and stuff. We know all of these things. This man got in the weirdest position I've ever seen in my entire life. This man got, okay, so he got under the bumper like, okay. Y'all get it? We were like, no, it didn't move, because it's a car. How long did you think you were lifting it? What world are you in? And he's like, oh, you know what? That's my bad. No, I'm doing it wrong. I'm gonna turn around. Turn around. You know that lift that's famous for being much easier, where they go to the Olympics and they put the bar behind them to pick it up. You know that thing that we've all seen before? This fool turned around, put his back to the car, like, okay.
the nerve to be like, y'all ready?
Y'all must have got it that time, right?
And we're like, no, it didn't move because it's a car. You can feel yourself not moving it, right?
And I knew he was hurt this time because he just wanted to walk off. but he was still in position. He was like, I'm done messing with y'all. Y'all not even serious. I can't believe it. Over here doing my job for me. That's right. Don't apologize. Let them think I earned those extra laughs. No, but the truth of the matter is that you have the same thing happening, you know? We kind of, I'm not saying we figured it out, but we kind of addressed it with the Barbian theory. And there's something that's like laid out all across the internet. And it's made me think about the question that I was asked. Who taught you to hate yourself? And I finally answered it in my own head. It's probably, whoever taught you to hate yourself is probably selling you something. That's all it is. We recognize it. We've learned to see it with women when it comes to makeup, when it comes to a certain fit, all that stuff. But with men, you don't see it called out in that same way. Because trust me, all these dudes, all these Manosphere bros, all these red pill dudes, every single one of these guys is also selling a course. Oh, that's curious. I thought we were brothers and you wanted to help me get girls. Why are you selling me? Okay. And some of it, we have to remember, because all of these people, no matter who you're talking about, young boys, young girls, all these people are very young, they're very impressionable, and they're trying to get a sense of the world. And you can fill the lunchbox as best as possible. But one thing that's assured is that all of your best qualities will not just be passed down. I wish it was true. And you can fill that lunchbox with as many good things as possible, but it then is up to them when they're with their friends, when they're by themselves, to actually look at what's been given to them and not just trade it for a bunch of junk. Because now you have parents who feel like out of nowhere they're meeting a new person, a person that they didn't raise. They hear these things being said that they never taught their kid, and they're like, where did this come from? And some of it, not all of it, but a good portion of it, can be blamed on being online. I think it's a mistake to just say that it's online throughout. Just go ahead and throw away the phone. Don't let the kid get on the computer or anything. Because the people posting these things are real people out in the world. So those ideas are running rampant in the world anyway. But I do think that it's in how algorithms are built. You know, you show genuine curiosity for one thing. And all they're trying to do as a company is hold your attention, keep you on the platform. So they see you choose one thing, so they send you more of that thing. And so it sends you down a rabbit hole. We always blame ourselves for falling down a rabbit hole, but it is what's served to us after we just watch one thing. You know, you watch one alpaca kick somebody in the chest. And then socials are sure. They're like, this must be his favorite thing. Let's go ahead and keep running them. You know? And I'm blessed that I am who I am. I was born when I was born. I have my own problems, my own worries and everything. The hardest life you're ever going to have to live is your own, which is why I do my best not to judge anybody, because I think genuinely that if I had been born as them in a different time, I'd probably be just like them. You know, and so I truly, truly believe that one of the, it's so funny when somebody tries to start a clap, but y'all aren't like feeling it. It's like, I don't say anything for claps, but every once in a while somebody feels moved to clap, but then they realize it's not like an everybody clap. Like, No. I didn't want to, but I didn't mind. You know? Let me earn it. but the truth is that, like, when it's that easy, I think we have to look at these problems as interlinked, you know? Because people talk about incels, they talk about people who've taken the black pill, all that stuff like that. And you got to recognize truly that these like incels, whatever people end up calling them, they don't really hate women. They hate themselves. That's where all that comes from. And I can only imagine if I was a kid now and I came home and I got online and I typed in to Google or any platform, especially social, why would she eat my cookie but then kiss somebody else? I'm in for a world of trouble. I'm immediately, with one prompt, getting into some really bad stuff. Because I bet you, because the people online are not necessarily talking to anyone. They're speaking to their own experiences and broadcasting them, projecting them on other people in every situation. And so if I type that in, I'm not getting back the answer I would get from an adult that's like, hey, look, these things happen. Maybe this person knew that you liked them. Maybe they didn't. Maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe the same thing would have happened either way. I know that's hard to hear, but there are so many people in the world. There's billions of people in the world. There are more people in the world than you can count right now because you're not great at math. That's what, to me, I'm not acting like I'm an expert. I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a sociologist. I haven't met every person. I don't know what everyone is going through. But to me, that's the key. That's what solves it. When people are like, what do we do? You just stay in each other's lives as much as possible. You know, all of this missing stuff gets filled in by the internet because we aren't there to do it. And I don't just mean parents. I mean like real community. I mean everyone that you know. Do you tell the people in your life that you know that you love them all the time? Do you never let a day go by without the people in your life knowing and feeling like they're loved by you? It just takes you. It only takes you. And so when you have something like that happen, you type it, you come home, you're crying, you're like, why was she with the cookie and the kisses? I'm not likely to get someone who's going to give me a solid answer, an answer I can take to the rest of my life. You know? I'm probably going to get somebody coming on, big old shoulders, being like, that's right, that's what women do, they take cookies. And best believe, brother, she's coming for your cookie tomorrow. And next time she won't want half, she's gonna want the whole thing. That's why you gotta shut these women down before they get your cookie. If it even gets that specific. I remember I was in college. College was the first time that, like a lot of people, that I was out of the house, and I was really out there by myself. I had to make all new friends. It was good for me, though. I had to just get acquainted with a new environment, and I had never been somewhere where it was all up to me. Go to bed whenever you want, do whatever you want, eat whatever you want, right? As long as you're getting good grades, nobody really cares. As long as you're not causing a bunch of havoc, no one's going to say anything. And I made a friend when I was in college, and we had a conversation one night that was genuinely transformative, because when someone opens up, and I'm not trying to be particular here, but it's true. When someone opens up, especially a man that's never opened up before, what happens next in that moment is crucial. It's incredibly important. Mishandling that moment almost guarantees that not only will the wall go back up, it's going to have another layer of bricks. It's going to be even harder to break down. And we just got to talking. I don't even know who shared first, but he told me things. He told me about his anxiety, depression, his feeling, his lack of purpose, all the things that he thought that he was missing in the world, and everything that he thought he was not worth, and things he thought he would never get. And it was all just like coming out so earnestly. And so then I did the same. I told him things. I told him about my anxiety, my depression. I told him about everything that I was going through, how I felt about myself, how I felt about the world, the people around me. Like nothing would really matter if I was here or not, right? And we shared for a while. And then when it was over, we realized like we were the only people we had told these things to. Everything else, we expected to just take to the grave, and we had just told it to each other because there was someone there to listen. And I know sometimes it can happen where like a man opens up to you and you don't know what to do. And so I'll give you one tip. If you really don't know what to say, if things are coming at you and they're things you would have never imagined coming out of this man's mouth, just hit him with a word. It won't fix everything, but it's a good placeholder. Because as men, sometimes word is all we really need. We're like, yep, yep, you get it. See, you get it. You get it. But truly, we shared a lot. And in that moment, we didn't know what to do. So we just hugged it out. And it was, and don't get me wrong, it was a manly hug. You know, we tightened our arms around each other and we hit the pads. That's how you hug as a man. You go ahead with the watch the end of Top Gun Maverick. Both those men ready to cry and they still do. I don't know what to do, so I gotta hit it. And it was a long hug because, once again, these are things we thought we would never be able to tell anybody else. And we're holding on to each other tight and we're patting each other on the back hard. And I'm not proud of it. But eventually, I did burp. And what happens in the moment that a man opens up to you and you open up to another man is crucial. When I burped, I was like, nah. I'm never opening up again, okay? What I look like? I just poured my soul out and I got burped by my boy? Never. Nah, we not on that. But I genuinely believe from the bottom of my heart, for every person, no matter how you feel, and some of that feeling is going to be advertisements shooting at you. Oh, you'll just be whole when you have this, when you get this. Someone trying to sell you something, trying to make you feel less so then you can be at least level after they give you their thing. But truly, I hope everyone can really hear this and understand this. If you are in the world, you know, I remember when it when it was told to me for the first time, it also stuck with me. If you're part of the world, you must be worth the world. And I hope that everybody can feel that way, that you're really worth the world because you're here. And I think about it because there's a whole new generation of people coming up. They're dealing with something we've never had to deal with before. Like, I think of Squish's kid. I was very nervous when Squish became a father because he has dropped everything I've ever seen him hold. He's one of the clumsiest mans. It's insane. But he is kind, and he is generous, and he has a good heart. And it'll be a better world if Squish's kid is like him. I hope that that's possible. I hope he can turn out just like his dad. It'll be a better world. It'll be a more haphazard world. Like, it'll be a different type of dangerous, but...